Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Not a bad way to close out the summer here on the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd, a little California love.
Man, well, there was a lot of California love for one NFL team in particular yesterday, Sean Wally, the San Francisco 49ers. Going in and taking care of business, which I might add, I have to say that, you know, in those predictions last week, if we can go into the archives, I believe that I picked the 49ers to throttle the Cowboys 31-10. And it almost looked like that was going to be the case in the fourth quarter until San Francisco 49ers place kicker shanked it to the left and blew all the mojo that I had. But nonetheless, they still beat the mess out of the Cowboys.
You know, Sean, it was really easy to figure out how the Niners were going to win that game. They had two quarterbacks.
Yeah. You know, Tony Romo, I understand why people love the Dallas Cowboys, and of course they do have tremendous talent. But when it all comes down to it, when the game is on the line, without fail, these guys find ways to lose. And Tony Romo just started it off early. He said, hey, I'm not going to wait till the end. He throws three picks in the first half, and the onslaught began. You know, I have to give it to the Dallas Cowboys, though, in the second half. They did hold the 49ers, I believe, to 7 points in the second half, and they outscored the 49ers. But, you know, again, you know, these guys know how to dig their own grave very well.
Yeah, Sean, and with the 49ers, you know, they definitely looked a lot better than they were showing in the preseason, and you have to wonder how much of that was just being basic and vanilla.
Yeah, basic and vanilla is right. I mean, I know that Jim Harbaugh is a, you know, he plays cat and mouse a lot, and so they had a basic vanilla offense that they were running, and that's what I mentioned. That's the reason why I said that last week, Sean, is I couldn't figure out why in the world the 49ers were playing so bad, and I thought something is up their sleeves, and sure enough it was. I mean, these guys came out and played with an energy that, you know, none of us had seen, you know, during the preseason, and, you know, all the adversities and everything that are going on in the locker room, which there, it still sounds like there are things going on in the locker room that could derail some of this momentum. But when these guys get out on the field, meaning the San Francisco 49ers, especially against the Dallas Cowboys, the way they looked yesterday, they looked like a team that's primed to make this run, regardless of injuries, regardless of people in jail, getting arrested, the whole nine. They look like a team that's ready to compete.
Well, Sean, there's another team playing down in the Bay Area that is much closer to the Bay than Levi's Stadium, and that would be your Oakland Raiders, your favorite team. They went across country, thought they had a chance against the Jets, but it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, it, you know, one of the things that I've been keeping track of, and of course my, all my Raider Nation fans who are listening, you know, there are a lot of reasons why the fan base should be upset, but I'm here to say, you know, let's give it a little bit of time. And the reason why I'm saying that is the way Derek Carr played yesterday, he played not to lose. And what he was doing is he was, you know, he had quick drop backs. He was getting rid of the ball early. And after a while, the defense started to feed on that. And Rex Ryan is one of these types of coaches that loves blood in the water. And the Raiders just never stretched the field. And as a result, it didn't open up the running game. There are murmurs that, you know, some of the fan base wants to see Latavius Murray, and I am one that would love to see Latavius Murray. But let's put this in a perspective, because Dennis Allen is also getting, you know, a lot of pushback as far as if he is capable of being a head coach, you know, being the head coach for the Oakland Raiders. When you don't get enough plays and you can't get a rhythm going, it makes it tough for you to go down into your depth chart, especially when it comes to you know, playing, you know, third string. And so you're looking at Latavius Murray, which is going to be an excellent running back. I believe he's the franchise. He's the future, as a matter of fact. But with that being said, he didn't get his get a chance to play. And so, you know, it is what it is. It was week one. I thought Geno Smith did a great job in controlling the football. I thought the Oakland Raiders were horrible on both sides of the line, on offense and defense, not getting pressure in the backfield on defense, and not being able to hold blocks, run blocks on offense. And so that's something that you can't lay your hat on the head coach or the quarterback.
Now, Sean, what's your take on Dennis Allen taking the Raiders out to the East Coast a day earlier than normal on Thursday to try to get acclimated to the time zone difference? And it didn't really look like it made a big difference on the field.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, the Oakland Raiders, the record shows that when they go back east, they have not done well over the past 8 to 10 years. And so I'm sure Dennis Allen wanted to try something new, something different. It goes without saying that the Oakland Raiders have the toughest road schedule in the NFL to go along with the toughest schedule in the NFL. So you know what recipe that creates as far as a record could, as far as their record could show. But I think that that was a good idea. I think it was something that Dennis Allen wanted to try to see if these guys can get acclimated to the time zone. And, you know, they didn't play that bad. It was just on, you know, when if I could pinpoint the areas, the bad areas of that game, it was both the offensive line and the defensive line for the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, if they can shore up something, they can get a little pressure and they could get some run blocking, I think, you know, the outcomes could be different in the weeks to come.
Let's get on out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines and welcome in Michael Gray, host of The Michael Gray Show at 710 ESPN Seattle. Michael, thanks for your time tonight.
Anytime, fellas. How are you?
Hey, Michael. So there are some. This is a fantastic time of the year for you up in the Pacific Northwest. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks starting off the beginning of the season with reckless abandon, just crushing the Green Bay Packers 36-16. And of course, there is a feel in the air right now around this time of the year for the Seattle Mariners as well. So I'm sure that you're definitely buzzing with information and insight. But let's talk about the Seahawks first. I mean, that game against the Green Bay Packers, did you expect it to be an onslaught like that?
You know, it sounds presumptuous, but yeah. I think when you look at what Green Bay likes to do and the way they like to run the tempo pass game through Aaron Rodgers and the fact that you were going to throw in a rookie center against that crowd and the 12th man at CenturyLink Field, it was easy to see where this matchup would be a problem for Green Bay, especially if they couldn't keep up defensively with the Seahawks offense, which for me really is the story of the season with this team. I think they can be really good on that side of the ball.
Now, you mentioned an interesting point here, Michael, the Green Bay Packers defense. Now, I thought that they were going to cause a little bit more disturbance. And, you know, preseason showed that the Seattle Seahawks were just running up and down the field on a lot of teams. But I felt like it would be a little bit different, you know, with Green Bay Packers defense. And it wasn't. I mean, Seattle just went out and did exactly what they were doing, scheduled as planned. And, you know, so what's your take on that? I mean, where do you see the Seattle Seahawks finishing up this year? As far as record,
well, I mean, I think they got a good chance to finish as well or better than they did a year ago. And really, when you talk about that offense, it starts with the unsexiest spot on the field. You start talking about the interior guard play, and Sweezy and James Carpenter coming in there. They were heralded by Tom Cable, the coach of that offensive line, as being vastly improved. James Carpenter, a rookie that had yet to really live up to his draft status. He's in a contract year. The Seahawks didn't pick up his option. He loses 40 pounds in the offseason, comes back in amazing shape. And really, when you control the offensive line the way the Seahawks run the ball, if you can control it in the interior, you saw Marshawn Lynch making plays in the run game where he wasn't getting touched until he was into the second level of the defense, and that's going to be a problem no matter who you are. If the Seahawks with Max Unger and those two guards can continue to control the interior part of a defensive line and have their way running between the tackles, it's going to be a really, really long season for opposing defenses. I think it was 94 of 110 yards for Marshawn Lynch came between the tackles. And if you can run like that, there aren't many teams that are going to slow these guys down.
Now, Michael, how
great will it be for the Seahawks if Percy Harvin can stay healthy all season and this offense looks nearly unstoppable?
Yeah, it's really, that's the magic question. Because when Harvin's on the field, he makes everybody better. Because defenses have to account for him. It's no longer a situation where you try to contain Russell on the edges and slow down Marshawn Lynch. With 11 on the field, you've got a new dynamic to account for. And as you said, if he stays healthy, I mean, the sky's the limit. Not just because of the plays that he can make, but because of the coverage that he draws, the attention he commands. And the fact of the matter is, guys like Jermaine Kearse, Doug Baldwin, Luke Wilson, Zach Miller, they're all going to take turns having big games because of what Percy Harvin can do. You watch that touchdown to Ricardo Lockett in the first game against Green Bay, and I guarantee people all over Wisconsin were jumping on Google trying to figure out who Lockett was, because that's not a name you hear about too often outside of here in Seattle. And Harvin really does have that kind of effect on that offense.
Now, Michael, you had a chance to actually be a fan for a game at CenturyLink and sit in the stands. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, you know, I try to do that more often than not. I tend to make everybody nervous in the press box. I went up there. I did the same thing for a couple of games last year, and I had to experience the banner raising. I wanted to see the pregame festivities, wanted to kind of feel the crowd, because it was such a special day in downtown Seattle. It was such an amazing celebration to see this city have one last chance to celebrate everything that happened in their first championship run a year ago, and then turn around and see this new season where the expectations really haven't dropped. And it was an amazing sight. It was an amazing sight and an amazing sound. I will tell you, it was punishing. I can only imagine what it was like to be on the field. I was way up high. I was in the 300 level. And even just with that access to the fans, my ears rang for 2 days. It was amazing to see that crowd and the 12s in full throat.
Michael Gray, host of the Michael Gray Show on 710 ESPN in Seattle. And Michael, you're talking about all of the fanfare and how, you know, the Seahawks get the fans involved. I was seeing some of the pregame to where I guess there was a banner of the Super Bowl trophy that was coming down from the Hawk's Nest. And, you know, you could just feel that energy in, you know, CenturyLink, that the fans were go from jump. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to believe that it can go another level, but it sounded like it did that, you know, during that game.
Yeah, it really did. And seeing the banner that came down in the north end is a TIFO. I mean, that's something that the soccer fans do on a regular basis, especially when the Portland Timbers are in town and the Sounders are playing at CenturyLink Field. And I thought that was pretty neat to see them incorporate that part of the Seattle sports experience into the crowd. And then, of course, the banner up in the stands and a chance to see the team come out with all the flash pods and the fireworks and everything else. They were as loud as any crowd I've ever experienced anywhere. It was, like I said, it was absolutely punishing. It was painful to the ears being up in that crowd.
Well, you know, there was a shifting gears a little bit down here in Northern California. Of course, there's a team named the San Francisco 49ers that looked really dull and lull in the preseason, came out like gangbusters in their first game beating the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. There are some things that are going on in 49er land as far as off-the-field activities. Now, it sounds from the media down here that they're trying to, I don't know, kind of brush it off a little bit as, hey, you know, these things kind of happen. But what's your take on that up in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, Eric, I mean, first, with regards to the game, they come out and they play Dallas, and just like we just watched in the Monday night game, which just wrapped up, I don't know if Detroit's any good or if the New York Giants are really bad. And the same thing with the Niners and the game against Dallas. They look pretty good, but, you know, Dallas could be lousy. And so I'll be curious to see how they weather the storm with everything that happened in the offseason in terms of the big-time vacancies. When you're missing Aldon Smith and you're missing Navarro Bowman, those are big time players. I mean, those are guys that you absolutely have to have. And Justin Smith was still doing his thing, and you expect the other guys to step up. Harbaugh is a fantastic coach, and he's got those guys playing tough, but they're just missing bodies. And then with regards, you know, Ray McDonald, you got to wonder. I mean, you got to wonder with what we've seen transpire in the last 24 hours with Ray Rice. Jed York scheduled to talk officially tomorrow. He's been all but invisible to this point. And we'll see what he's learned from Baltimore. We'll see what he's learned from the experience with the Ravens and what they actually know about the Ray McDonald situation. It looks like a really, really bad time for team executives to be in this particular position. And I don't envy the spot that the team is in. It's a lot of turmoil for one offseason, and I haven't even mentioned Harbaugh's contract situation, which is an ongoing issue.
Yeah, most definitely. And now, Michael, you mentioned an interesting point, with the whole Ray Rice situation. The NFL was looking to meet, the owners were looking to meet as far as lightening the suspensions, as far as performance enhancement drugs. Do you think that they're going to toe the line and lighten the stance in lieu of what's been going on here over the past 24 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I really do, and I've thought that for a while. In terms of the NFL, I mean, do they have a vested interest in having negative headlines over marijuana, over performance enhancers that aren't necessarily performance enhancers? Because for the longest time that meant steroids, and now it's a blanket for a number of other drugs, and the players are the only ones that can reveal what they've been accused of taking or what they tested dirty for. The league can't confirm that. So they're left in a situation of constantly explaining away what sounds like trivial suspensions or suspensions over trivial issues. And I don't think the league wants any more bad press than it necessarily has to have. I think they would like a lot of those things to go away as soon as possible. And so it'll be very, very interesting with what's happened in the last 24 hours to see how they vote on this. But I know the NFLPA has obviously got a horse in that race, and I'm sure that they'd like to get that through, if only to eliminate some of the negative press.
Yeah, when you're talking about negative press, the NFL has done a wonderful job as far as getting the word out and getting a strong fan base. And what I mean by that, there is a 35% female audience in the NFL. And so, you know, you can be rest assured that everybody's watching to see what's going to happen here in the next couple of days or so as far as decisions rendered.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to see the level of incompetence with regards to what happened in Baltimore. I can't use words strong enough to explain my level of disgust with how that went down. It's amazing. And if what TMZ is now reporting, that they have proof that the NFL was aware of the video that was just released last night and into the morning, at that point, and I just sent this out on Twitter not too long ago, if that's true, if what they're reporting is true and the NFL either didn't know about it but could have, or did know about it and didn't act on it, then Ray Rice better not be the only guy in the NFL losing his job.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, because, of course, you had mentioned Raymond down here in San Francisco as well. I mean, I'm sure everybody's on pins and needles to see what's going to happen here over the next few days, on a decision rendered. Now let's shift gears to the Seattle Mariners. Of course, the Seattle Mariners, this time of the year, this is something that hasn't been nomenclature up in the Pacific Northwest for a little bit. And of course, we have Felix Hernandez on the mound tonight, two games out from the actual number one wild card spot that is held by the Oakland A's. Seattle Mariner fans, I mean, are they starting to turn out in full force yet?
Well, I mean, this Mariners team, you talk about a surprise. They've only been in four playoff series. I mean, they've only been in the playoffs four times. And never in the same calendar year have the Mariners and the Seahawks been in the postseason. So to call this the best September in the history of Seattle sports really isn't a reach. And I know chucklehead radio hosts like myself are prone to hyperbole and exaggeration. But this really is just an amazing time to be here in Seattle. I mean, Chris Peterson, for all his flaws, he's 2-0 too at UW. So it's not a bad time to be here. And the Mariners, really, they've made a believer out of me. I initially, at the beginning of the year, thought that this was a 79-83 win team, somewhere two games either side of 500 was my guess when the season began. They're better than that. They've got a solid offense, and they've got a really good rotation that now is better with the additions of guys like Taijuan Walker and a healthy James Paxton and, you know, a bullpen that you could put up against any in baseball. If they get to the postseason, if they can get into a series, they become a nightmare matchup. Now, they've got some ground to cover in the next 20 games, and as you said, they got to stay, you know, with their winning ways. They got a bunch of games against the A's and the Angels coming up. They got two series against Houston and a four-game set in Toronto. They're going to need a bunch of those. But they could potentially, with the games against Oakland, they could catch and pass the A's. They could put them in a situation. And then it's a matter of watching the Tigers and the Kansas City Royals to see about that other spot and how those, you know, how those series turn out.
Michael Gray, host of the Michael Gray Show on 710 ESPN in Seattle. And Michael, you had an awesome article in the middle of August. It was called Gray Area, talking about Lloyd McClendon and some of the things that he has taken as far as the blueprint from Jim Leland. And, of course, the Detroit Tigers doing some awesome stuff. So Lloyd McClendon doesn't really get too much credit as far as, you know, what's going on with the Seattle Mariners, but he has to around this time of the year. I mean, you know, these guys are clicking on all cylinders.
Well, he's certainly gotten credit here in town. Nationally, I think people have been slower to come around to it, but the closer we get to the postseason and the closer the Mariners get to securing a playoff spot, I think at some point his name comes up for AL Manager of the Year. It has to. And when you look at he and Jim Leland, there are a lot of similarities between, you know, what Jim Leland did in Detroit in his first year and what Lloyd's done here. They both inherited 71-win teams. They both turned around, and of course, Jim Leland that year went all the way to the World Series before losing the World Series. But I mean, he did it on the best ERA in the American League. He did it with his pitching. I know everybody thinks of Detroit now as an offensive team, but a lot of those guys weren't in place. He was still dealing with Pudge Rodriguez and Maglio Ordóñez and some other guys that weren't, I mean, they were nowhere near what Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez are today. And that's, you know, that's been kind of Lloyd McClendon's calling card. He's got this really good pitching staff. He's managed them incredibly well, keeping guys fresh, extra days of rest, managing this bullpen so that he has eight arms strong. He's eight arms deep in the bullpen. He can go to it anytime. And that's actually deeper now with the roster expansions. And I was still in Michigan when Leland took over the Tigers, and it's been funny to me to watch Lloyd McClendon, and the number of times you could swear it was Jim Leland talking when you hear a Lloyd McClendon soundbite, because they both take a very stoic, very understated, monotone approach. They don't get too excited. They don't go around crazy high-fiving guys. They don't get too down when things get bad. And I think that kind of steady presence in that clubhouse, you're seeing it pay off now with these Mariners who are just 20 games away and very much in control of their own destiny.
Yeah, and definitely in control of their destiny. You're looking at a team down here in Northern California in the Oakland A's that have really, really taken a huge dip as far as since the All-Star break. You can kind of pinpoint it back to the Cespedes trade, but Bob Melvin is definitely in for it with the Seattle Mariners cruising right along as far as winning ball games and showing that consistency. Now, question for you, Michael, because, you know, being down here, for me being down in Oakland, what would cause, you know, a team to actually take a huge slide like that, especially one that's won the AL West 2 years in a row? You figure that they've been here before, and it looks like they haven't. What would you accredit that to?
Well, boy, if I had that answer, I would be on the phone to Major League Baseball looking for a raise. You know, the only thing that I can say, and it's something that happened in Detroit as well, you look at those two teams, they made the big moves at the deadline. They made the big trades. And unlike what we saw here in Seattle and with some other teams, both the A's and the Tigers lost a piece that they needed. They lost a piece from their everyday lineup, and they didn't trade for somebody at that spot. They traded elsewhere. You saw it with the Tigers and a guy that I saw come into that organization when he was part of the Curtis Granderson deal. Austin Jackson ends up here. Well, now the Tigers don't have a center fielder. They play in the biggest field in the American League. So obviously, you know, they've struggled with some of that. They lost their leadoff guy. They lost the guy they were counting on. And I look at Oakland and I see some of the same things. When you lose Cespedes and you give him up to replace it with pitching, certainly if you've watched Oakland over the last couple of years and seen their postseason struggles, you understand why it would be easy to look at this lineup, assume that it's win now, and then go get the pitching that you have lacked. The problem is that the Angels got hot despite the Richards injury to Garrett Richards and losing him, and the Mariners have stayed right on track. So they've got a real situation. I know they've lost 10 of their last 14, and like every team in MLB, the irony always is that point in the season when you flip the schedule and sample size no longer becomes an issue. You've only got a few games left now to make up ground, and you've only got a few games to start playing your best ball as you head towards the postseason. And that's certainly got to be on the forefront of everybody's mind in Oakland, because they made some moves for guys that just flat out won't be here next year. They've got to do it now.
Now, Michael, in 2013, you got the job at 710 ESPN Seattle, coming from Omaha, Nebraska. Talk about what that was like, making that transition, and then what you thought of life in Seattle.
Well, you know, it's amazing. It's going to sound strange, but Nebraska and Seattle, Omaha specifically, they've got more in common than you'd think. You know, both are geographically kind of isolated and fiercely loyal to their teams. The fans in Nebraska, I recommend it to anybody that's a fan of college football. If you have the opportunity, go to Lincoln on game day, experience the Sea of Red. If you're hungry or thirsty, buy a $9 t-shirt from the opposing team and then just walk around Lincoln. you won't be able to eat or drink enough. The fans are so accommodating when they see someone from out of town. They can't wait to hear your story and talk to you and sit down. And then it's an experience that you really got to, you really have to do it. Like I said, if you're a college football fan, the opposing team gets a standing ovation, win, lose, or draw, at Memorial Stadium. You beat the Huskers on their home field, they give you a standing O when you leave. It's bizarre. It's an amazing culture. And then, you know, you come here to the Pacific Northwest. To put it simply, it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. I joked for the first 6 months that, you know, my trip to work, I was expecting a unicorn to jump out in front of me, because it looks like something from a movie, the waterfalls and the forest and the mountains. And then I just so happened to luck into, you know, the Super Bowl run for the Seahawks. The Mariners now are playoff bound. The Sounders are in first place. The Huskies hired Chris Peterson. It's been a really good time to be talking sports here in Seattle, and I think it's probably changed a few minds about what the city's really all about, because it is an intense, intense city when it comes to these teams and their support. You know, their fan base is fervent. The 12th man has been rewarded, and Mariners fans, while somewhat reluctant after a decade of struggling, have really come on and now are starting to get truly excited about the prospects of this team, especially as it relates to the postseason. If they could get into a postseason series with somebody, all of a sudden really special things could happen for this team.
That's the voice of Michael Gray, host of The Michael Gray Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. Follow him at The Michael Gray, G-R-E-Y. Michael, thanks so much for hanging on with us tonight. We appreciate your insight.
Anytime, fellas, anytime.
Hey, Michael, next time you're on, we'll definitely talk some Huskies there. You know, you mentioned Chris Peterson, and, man, we just didn't have enough. But, yeah, I do. I want to pick your brain on what's going on in Mont Lake and, you know, some awesome things that are happening.
Hey, it's always a good problem to not have enough time and too much stuff, right?
You know it.
There he goes, Michael Gray. Take a listen to him at 710sports.com as well. Follow him on Twitter at TheMichaelGray. Sean Boyd, another good interview from one of our friends at 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, Michael, you know, you can tell how excited he is to be busy up there with winning franchises, man. And you know, you can go back to the Boston franchises as far as their world championships and everything. And, you know, it's not quite there, but at the same time, you know, they're winning up there in Seattle, so that's some good stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and guest number two will be on the double. That is Greg Bell from the Tacoma News Tribune. So keep it locked in. You are listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Seahawks beat writer Greg Bell with the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Great, Greg. And Greg, yeah, no doubt about it, after the first game of the season, the Seattle Seahawks handling the Green Bay Packers with ease. Well, what is the talk going on in Renton this week for the upcoming match against the San Diego Chargers?
Well, of course, the talk from Pete Carroll is that whatever happened against Green Bay is not going to matter at all against San Diego on Sunday. And that's really the mentality this team's had throughout this run to the Super Bowl last year and then in the months after the Super Bowl and the preseason. Is, you know, that was last year. That was in the past. In this case, that was last week. The Packers at home. They were jazzed and the place was juiced. The Super Bowl banner unfurled, but none of that's going to matter on Sunday in Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. So they're going to have to bring it defensively, I think. This is a team that the Chargers is going to test Seattle, and they're going to test their pass rush ability. And Phillip Rivers is a very good third down quarterback. They're going to test the secondary that's been thinned a little bit by injuries. Nickelback Jeremy Lane went on injured reserve today. They got to find another nickelback. So it's not smooth sailing, even though they beat the Packers by 20 points last week.
So it looks like the game plan this week, let's face it, the cat's out. Percy Harvin, it looks like he is 110% healthy. It might be 50% of the play calling going to Percy Harvin. What will that do as far as preparation for San Diego? And what is the mentality for the Seattle Seahawks going forward?
Well, you're right in that Harvin changes the way defenses had played Seattle in the past. Of course, Seattle under Pete Carroll has been known for the power running game with Marshawn Lynch and relying on field position and strong defense to control games. Now, there's an explosive element to Seattle's offense they haven't had before, and that's Russell Wilson throwing really precisely and Percy Harvin stretching defenses. We saw Thursday night the Packers had to defend them 53.5 yards across the field just because of Harvin, and 3 of the first 7 plays were to Harvin, fly sweeps and bubble screens and things that really stretched Green Bay sideline to sideline, and what it did was it made Marshawn Lynch's holes much bigger, much wider inside for the power run game. I think that's the recipe Seattle's going to do quite a bit this season, is to establish Harvin horizontally, more so than vertically, to make defenses really have to stretch, and so linebackers getting out of what usually are the run fills for them and having to go out and play the flanks or to go chase Harvin, and that makes Marshawn Lynch a much better inside runner with much bigger lane.
Now, Greg, on Thursday, it appeared that the offensive line was a cohesive unit. You've got Carpenter, who lost a bunch of weight in the offseason, and Britt, the rookie, playing really well. And that's going to be a big key moving forward for the Seahawks to maintain that consistency, something that wasn't seen last year, even though they had the Super Bowl run.
Yeah, you're right. I thought last year the Seahawks won in spite of their offensive line quite a few times. And a lot of times Russell Wilson will mask the offensive line's deficiencies by avoiding sacks, getting out of bad plays, and just single-handedly sometimes making positive plays out of negative ones. I'm still not convinced that this offensive line has got the continuity and consistency that it needs to have. We'll see. Justin Britt, you're right, had a good first start. He looked opposite Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews of Green Bay. But the Seahawks helped him a lot. They had Zach Miller as a tight end that stayed in the block on downs. They had running backs that were chip blocking with Britt's man. They even had Jermaine Kearse, the wide receiver, come in motion one time and line up as an H-back and help Britt in pass protection. So they are going out of their way to help the rookie right tackle, and that's something that is going to be an issue, especially early in the season. Every team that Seattle plays is going to target, their defensive flanks are going to target Justin Britt and rush that side. I'd have to say the jury's still out on this offensive line to see how consistent it can be.
Now, Greg, you've been covering the Seahawks for the News Tribune for roughly a month and a half, 2 months. Now, what has been the biggest surprise to you that you've seen either in the locker room or out on the practice field in Renton?
Well, you know, I did cover for the Associated Press. I covered the Seahawks for 5 years, won their first Super Bowl run, and through the first month of Pete Carroll and John Snyder's regime as coach and general manager. What I noticed right away in Carroll now, 4 or 5 seasons into this compared to when he first got here, he's much more of a hands-off delegator during practice time. Now, he's still all in it with meetings, and that's not to say during practices he's not running around, but he's not doing as much as he used to. He's a little more of a CEO presence on the practice field. And he told me, I asked him about that a couple weeks into it, I told him that's what I had seen. He said, you're right, and that's because the players have internalized my message. It took me 2 or 3 years and 700 some roster moves and transactions in those 2 or 3 seasons to get his message instilled. And any Seahawk who's here has bought in and adheres to that message. And if they're not buying in, they're not here anymore. It's as simple as that. And so Carroll is much more, as I said, a delegator in letting his coordinators and his position coaches run practices. Daryl Bevel, to me, seems to have a lot of autonomy in developing game plans. And it's just a little bit different that when we first got to Seattle, Carroll thought and did do every single thing on the practice. You know, he would throw passes to the defensive backs, get in defensive back drills, jamming wide receivers. He was in it. And now he's much more of a more traditional delegating coach. And that's probably the biggest thing I've noticed. I don't know if that's a surprise, but it sure is a difference than when Carroll first got here.
Greg Bell with the Tacoma News Tribune, Seahawks insider, kind enough to join us here on the double. And Greg, you spent some time down here in the Bay, of course, you know, working with the Oakland Raiders once upon a time. There are some tough situations going on down here in Northern California. You're talking about the Oakland Raiders. One bright shining moment, though, Derek Carr at the quarterback. What say you about that decision to have him starting at the beginning of the season?
Well, the Seahawks got him a job. He wasn't going to start until the Seahawks played the final exhibition game down there in Oakland and made him look like Johnny Unitas. And all of a sudden, Dennis Allen and the Raider fans, they're, whoa, let's get Derek Carr in there. That's basically what happened, is that he just lit up the Seahawks for 2 quarters of that preseason game. It was 35-14 in the first half, and I can't remember, I think it was 13 of 16, and looked very poised. Now, half of that first half was against the Seahawks second teamers, but nevertheless, it was pretty evident that that is the guy that should start for the Raiders, and he had the momentum and he had the team's belief, and of course the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in town, I know that, but it was pretty apparent that night that Carr was their guy, and it made me shake my head. Guys, a lot of the beat writers there, Jerry McDonald, Steve Corcoran, a lot of guys I covered the team with, Phil Barber, still there. And we just laughed, and we were trying to count up the starting quarterbacks that the Raiders have had and the head coaches they've had since I covered them. My last season was half of 2005. And it's astounding, the turnover at the top and at the most important position in the sport, and not to mention the all-encompassing owner who's no longer has passed away. It's a huge amount of upheaval for any team, any franchise to endure. And frankly, I'm not surprised that the Raiders are where they are for the tumultuous decade that they've had. And this is coming from a guy who covered a team in San Diego when they were in the Super Bowl against Tampa Bay and covered Bill Callahan's downfall the following season. It's very, very hard in this league. One of the reasons the Seahawks have had success is because of their continuity here in the last 4 years with Carroll and Schneider and lockstep. It's very hard in this league to change head coaches and quarterbacks as frequently as the Raiders haven't had any kind of measured success at all.
Now, Greg, one of the things, you know, with the Raiders this year, of course, they brought a lot of older players, some journeymen that have had some success. Some would say have had Super Bowl rings. Do you see that as something, a turnaround that is would be good for Dennis Allen and the Oakland Raiders? Of course, you know, bringing in Justin Tuck, Lamar Woodley on the defensive side, and, of course, Charles Woodson in that secondary. Now, when you add up all the ages there, I mean, it's a recipe for, you know, a lot of Epsom salt. But at the same time, is that something that could benefit the Oakland Raiders moving forward?
Well, I'd say what else is new with the Raiders? I mean, when do they not bring in washed up, cast off veterans, guys that are 35, 40 years old? How old is Charles Woodson now? He's got to be about 50. I mean, yeah. I think he was in Michigan when I was in high school. He's been around a block or two.
I think Charles is about 37 years old. Man, he had a great interception there in the first half.
No, he's 50. He's 50 years old. I know he's been around the league for about 40 years. No, it's no different than what it was 15, 20 years ago with the Raiders. I mean, you could go Al Davis all the way back to Daryl LaMonica, who was cast off by the Buffalo Bills in the AFL days, and that's the way that franchise operates. I covered Bill Romanowski, who was supposedly shot. Jerry Rice came from the 49ers to the Raiders. Charlie Garner was cast aside by Philadelphia and became the lead back. Rich Gannon. I mean, yes. The list goes on of teams giving up on guys that the Raiders. Jim Plunkett, of course, the most famous example, won a Super Bowl after being cast away by two teams. It's what the Raiders have done, and frankly, it's what a team has to do to stopgap and fill holes that they haven't developed draft picks, or they may ill-advised trades, or some ill-advised draft picks, Darius Hayward Bay. There are examples of the Raider franchise time and time and time again having to go to this stopgap veteran free agent route. And frankly, in this NFL, it's not the way to have to build a franchise for the long haul. It might get you some short-term success, but those veterans are not going to be able to play at the highest level, at the highest effort for 16 regular season games year in and year out. They're going to break down. They're going to get old. They're going to ask for a bigger contract or whatever it is. It is not the recipe to build a long-term franchise. And unfortunately for the Raiders, they haven't had the executive patience to have the same head coach and the same program and same general manager that will see these young draft picks through. And until they do, I don't think there's going to be any sustained success in Oakland.
Now these two franchises meet in Seattle, November the 2nd. It sounds like it's a runaway train when the Oakland Raiders come up to CenturyLink Field. But hopefully some good things happen, and maybe the Raiders will give a good contest to the Seattle Seahawks on November 2nd.
Well, you know, you can never tell. I mean, the NFL is so parity-driven, as we all know, and the rules are set up, both in scheduling and free agency, to make seasons and games competitive. And on a week-to-week basis, you never know. We'll never know. Who knows by November 2nd what's going on with the Raiders and Derek Carr still the starting quarterback and how good he is and, you know, how healthy Seattle still is. But you're right. On paper and common sense, especially here in Seattle, and playing a game at CenturyLink Field, that's a tough, tough task for any road team, especially a team that's in flux like the Raiders.
Now, Greg, with the success the Seahawks have had and the blueprint they've used, it seems like teams like the Raiders and other teams are starting to try and build from that same recipe, that same mold, getting, you know, the Raiders specifically getting Reggie McKenzie from Green Bay, similar to how John Schneider's coming from Green Bay here in Seattle. And, you know, the bigger cornerbacks, the younger, faster guys, it's definitely worked well in Seattle, and it's starting to be copied in certain parts of the NFL.
Well, yeah, and you're right about Reggie McKenzie. That's a huge step for them, both in terms of a true GM and a system that he's willing to stick to for years and years. And that's something the Raiders needed. And that's something they've needed for the longest time because, let's face it, Al Davis was the de facto general manager and coach for that team for decades. And any GM that was under Al Davis was just didn't have the autonomy that Reggie McKenzie enjoys right now to build a team and to decide on rosters. So that is a huge step in towards stability and consistency for the Raiders. And it is, as I mentioned, that's the recipe in the NFL. You can sign free agents and take flyers on draft picks all you want, but until you have stability at the top and in the coaching staff, it's a really hard way
to succeed year in and year out.
Now, Greg, in all the teams that you've covered, now the Seahawks, the Raiders previously, doing work for the AP in Seattle, working the last 4 years at the University of Washington, what are some of your favorite moments, sports moments, that you've been able to cover?
Well, you know, I've covered a few Super Bowls, and one of the best moments of covering the Super Bowls I've covered was to cover the U2 halftime concert in New Orleans the year that the Rams and the Patriots played in the Super Bowl a few months after 9/11. That was a very poignant moment to be witnessing in person. The greatest moment I've had as a sports journalist is actually not in football, but it was at the Winter Olympics in Vancouver in 2010. I got to cover the entire men's hockey tournament, and I covered the gold medal match between Canada and the United States, and that was, to talk about the caliber of athletes, the best in their sport, and the fact that that entire country of Canada was riding on every shot. It was an amazing experience to be in Canada on a gold medal Olympic hockey match with Canada playing the United States. And I was sitting seven rows off the ice next to the Prime Minister of Canada, right behind Jerry Jones and Michael J. Fox. And between the press setup that the Olympics had for that hockey tournament, that we were on center ice and seven rows off the ice, and the caliber of the competition and the passion, and after the game, the partying in the streets, and how big a deal that was. By far, I tell people that was by far the best, the highlight of my professional career so far.
Isn't it amazing that this is called work, but you get to be in some of the biggest moments, not only locally, but also nationally and internationally as well?
Yeah, I definitely do not take that for granted. I'm a kid who grew up in the Steel Valley of Ohio and all the right moves type of college, of high school football on Friday nights, and the stuff I used to watch as a kid, and to be able to cover it in World Series and Rose Bowls and Super Bowls and Olympics that I've done, I'm very fortunate, and I don't take it lightly. And I know a lot of people wouldn't mind being in the shoes I've been in a few times.
Well, Greg, it was great getting to meet you in the press box of CenturyLink Field Thursday night. Thank you so much for your time and insight and your military service as well.
I appreciate that. Thanks for
mentioning
me.
Greg.
Thank you. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, Seattle Seahawks beat writer, doing a great job, and he's done lots of things up and down the sports world.
Yeah, most definitely. And of course, you know, there is that excitement up there in Seattle. You know, the great things that are going on with the Seahawks, and being a Seahawks insider, you know, getting a chance to get to know what Pete Carroll is all about, the mastermind behind the plan. And so, yeah, nothing but good times up there for Greg.
Well, Sean, we're down to the final game of week one in the NFL. It's been a fun football weekend.
Yeah, but man, you know what I'm excited about is our next guest. I can't wait, man. We haven't talked about it at all. But man, you know, Theory of a Dead Man, the bassist for Theory of a Dead Man, Dean Back, coming up, man. I was just listening to All or Nothing just a minute ago. And so, man, I can't wait for him to get on. So we can talk a little bit of, talk a little bit about his group, talk a little bit about sports, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great venturing into the world of music and getting in behind the scenes, if you will, with Theory of a Dead Man bassist Dean Back. And that interview is coming up next. Keep it locked. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night. Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name.
Cause you burn with the brightest flame. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And we're going back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcoming big time guest number 3 from Theory of a Dead Man, Dean Back. Dean, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Dean. Hey, Dean, some great things going on with you. Of course, for those of you who don't know, and you should know, some our listeners should know, Theory of a Dead Man, awesome group. You're the bassist for the group, man, and man, you guys lead a busy schedule with the tour going on.
Oh, it's nonstop. Now that the album is out, we're in full on support mode. We got the whole itinerary booked until the end of the year. I think I get a total of like 9 days at home until Christmas. So yeah, we're slugging it on the road here and having a blast doing it.
Now, that album that you are talking about, of course, that's your 5th album, and that was just released on July 29th, correct?
Yeah, Savages, number 5.
Ha-ha, Savages, number 5. So what's the best song that you like on that album thus far?
I think one of my favorites is the last track on the record, The Sun Has Set on Me. It was funny because when we started putting the songs together for this record, Tyler had sent us a bunch of ideas and everything, and every song was in different states of completion. And that one was basically just a guitar riff and a chorus idea. And we started jamming all these songs and getting ready for the record and putting all the songs together. And we're listening to all the songs and I can't remember who surfed up, but it's kind of overlooked that song. And Dave and I both assumed that, yeah, well, that's obviously one that we're going to work on. But maybe, I don't know, Tyler kind of just didn't have it in the forefront of his mind. But we definitely wanted that one on there. And then we started jamming it, and it just came together so awesome. And it's a cool track that ends the record. It kind of fades out. And we actually got a children's chorus to come and sing on it, too. So that's a personal favorite of mine.
Dean, take us behind the scenes. What is it like trying to get an album ready and writing the songs and trying to get the tunes right?
Well, this one was quite a different process. We, at the beginning of the putting the record together, there was a lot of movement in our record label. I think Atlantic had just bought Roadrunner, and there was a new team being put together. So for us, it was, we were working with some new people, they really pushed us hard, which was, it was great. We actually recorded this record in 2 sessions, too. We did a 6-song session. It was about November of 2013. And then, that's almost a year ago. That's crazy. And then, so we recorded those 6 songs, and then we took a break over the holidays and wrote some more, and then came back and finished the record in February. And then there was a lot of setup time. We really wanted to make sure the timing was right for the record, and you know, finally July 29, 2014, it came out.
Now, Dean, life on the road, it doesn't appear that it can be as glamorous as what fans think, because if you look at your schedule, you're playing 5-6 nights a week. That's got to be rough on family life and just for free time on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a family at home, a wife and two little girls, so it's tough being on the road as much as we are. Thank goodness for Skype and all the technologies that make us feel a little bit more attached to home. I can't imagine what the fans back in the 80s and 90s did when they had to use a payphone every time they got to a gig to call home and check in. Now I can send pictures and video chat with everybody. It's a lot easier, I think. And then as far as being on the road too, this whole summer we've taken up golf. We have like, I think, 8 sets of clubs on the bus now. So us and the crew, every day off, we're searching for a golf course to get out there and swing the clubs. But now we're getting into September, so golf weather for most of the country is going to start to come to a close. So we're going to find some new hobbies.
Dean Beck joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Dean, you're mentioning golf. Man, I can't see how you guys could possibly find time to play golf with a hectic schedule like that. And you're just mentioning that September coming around, it's starting to pick up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we have every day off, we're searching for a golf course. We usually play, you know, 2 or 3 in a row, have a day off, and then another 3 in a row. So, you know, we do get 1 or 2 days a week that we're not playing. So that's when we usually are in the middle of nowhere and try to find a golf course to get to. And it's a good way to see the country and, you know, take in all these different golf courses.
Now, obviously, you guys are veterans at this, and you've made the adjustments, but kind of take us back here to 2001. Of course, you got the signing from Nickelback frontman Chad Kroeger at 604 Records. Walk us through that. I mean, because obviously you have I'll just go ahead and say it. There's a similar sound to the way your Theory of a Dead Man sounds in Nickelback.
I think maybe in the beginning there was. I think we've definitely gone away from that kind of sound. But I guess sometimes it might cross paths a little bit. But yeah, back then we played in Tyler's dad's basement. We never played live gigs. We just always just played in the basement, wrote songs, always wanted to do our own stuff, and we made a couple recordings. And it was a friend of Tyler who was cousins with Chad's girlfriend at the time or something like that gave him our demo. And it was right after he had worked with the band Default. I don't know if you remember them. But he had worked with them, and they had some good success. But they got signed to some other label. So that was when he was like, man, I got to start my own label and sign new fans to my label. And we were the first ones to come along. He heard the demo and really liked our stuff and wanted to work with us, and started 604 Records with his lawyer, Jonathan Simkin. And so there we're signed to 604 Records in Canada, and then Roadrunner Records signed us for the rest of the world. And it's been a great marriage ever since.
Dean Back of Theory of a Dead Man with us. Now, Dean, you went from playing just in a garage. What was that like when you finally got in front of hundreds or thousands of people?
Well, it was crazy. Even when we got the record deal, we didn't even have a band name. We started recording the record, and we didn't even have a band name. So, we had all the song titles written down, and then in the recording process, one of the songs changed titles, and so we used Theory of a Dead Man as our band name.
Now, Dean, I'm a little curious here. So how were you introduced without a band name?
Yeah, well, we never played without a band name, but because we never played live. I mean, we did our showcase, and we had named ourselves by then. But we had, I think, 6 of the major American record labels come up to Vancouver to see us play this showcase. And we had literally been on stage probably 6 times we let the music talk. We didn't have a big glamorous show or anything, but we learned that all on the road.
Now, Dean, one of the reasons we're having you on the show here is I'm in Tri-Cities, Washington, which is home to Kennewick, Washington, and you guys will be here performing on the 11th, and then your Pacific Northwest tour the next night, the 12th, White River Amphitheater in Auburn, Washington, and then 2 days later, the 14th, you're down in Sean Boyd's neck of the woods at the Aftershock Festival in Sacramento, so it'll be great to have you here in the Northwest and then get you down to Northern California.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. Kennewick, we've been to a few times, and it's always a good show. Auburn, which is just outside Seattle there, and we've played Seattle a bunch. Never been down to the Auburn yet, so I'm excited for that. It's also driving distance from hometown Vancouver, so I'm going to have a bunch of family be able to come down and say hello, which is exciting for me. And then, down into California, and with the West, we really don't get to very often, so we're really excited about it, getting in front of people that haven't seen us for a while.
Now, Dean, we're definitely excited to have you down here in Sacramento. Northern California is a hotbed for music as well, and so you'll have a great time down here, and I know that you're going to put on an awesome, awesome performance, meaning Theory of a Dead Man.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we're excited. We're going to have some good shows. We're starting to put some of the new songs in the set. We've been sound checking one song in the last 3 days. I think tonight's the first night we're going to put it in the set. So it's a lot of fun to start playing some of the new material and get fans' reactions of all the new stuff.
Now, Dean, you had mentioned getting out to play golf. And, of course, this is a sports show. What's your take on this year and what's been going on in the world of golf? Of course, Tiger Woods has fallen off a little bit with injury, and then you have Rory McIlroy that has surged onto the scene. Do you guys get a chance to follow it that much as far as the pro players, or is it just something that you like to do, meaning playing golf?
No, it's funny. I actually organize a golf pool on the bus. So every week we have a pick-a-player box. Have all the world rankings of all the players, and you choose, two players from the top 10 and then two players from 11 to 20, et cetera, until you have a 12-man group. And everybody puts $10 into the pot, and we watch golf every weekend. But now with the Ryder Cup, or not the Ryder Cup, the FedEx Cup, the pool or the field is getting smaller and smaller. So I think this might be the last weekend of the pool, although we are thinking of doing a draft for the next weekend, where it's like a snake draft. But now it's football season, and now we're starting the football pool.
Definitely. So who's your starting quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers?
Well, it's funny. This is the first year I've been in a fantasy league, and I never really have paid much attention to football before. So I'm slowly learning, but my starting lineup is Nick Foles, Forte, Bell in Pittsburgh, Macklin, Julio Jones, Olsen as my tight end, got Crosby as my kicker, got the Bears defensive team. I also have Cutler and Jeffrey, so I think I'm adopting the Bears as my favorite team. I already ordered a Forte jersey because number 22 was always my hockey number. So that's one of the reasons why I picked Forte. I think I'm a Bears fan.
Now, Dean, you're having a great week one in NFL fantasy with that lineup for sure. And I would have to say that being a Canadian BC-based band, that you've got to be big Vancouver Canuck fans, I would assume.
Oh, huge. Hockey is the number one sport for me. As far as following and my knowledge, I've been in a fantasy hockey league for, I think, about 7 or 8 years now. But, I grew up playing hockey, and still when we're home, David, the guitar player, and I are on beer league teams. So, we're pretty into hockey.
Yeah, it's definitely a team I've followed over the years, and it'd be great if Seattle could finally get one and have a big rivalry.
I was just talking about that last night. We had a friend that played in the league for a while come out and visit us, and I was talking about how Seattle, it would be awesome to get a team there. And you know, a little bit of rivalry drive to the games. And, I hope that it happens.
Well, Dean Back, thank you so much for your time. The bassist from Theory of a Dead Man currently on tour. They'll be in Kennewick on the 11th, White River Amphitheater in Auburn on the 12th, and down in Sacramento at the Aftershock Festival on the 14th. Dean, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Any recommendations for golf course in Sacramento?
Oh, wow. I'd probably say, I go to Hagen Oaks, and I know a lot of the listeners are out there at Hagen Oaks, so... that one is in North Sacramento. Very good. Very good golf course.
All right. Duly noted.
All right, Dean. Well, hey, when you get into town or whatever, please don't hesitate to look me up, man. I'd love to get out there and swing with you.
That'd be great.
All right, man.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
There goes Dean Back, the bassist from Theory of a Dead Man. Awesome guy that knows his guitar and also his sports as well, Sean.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, his fantasy team, when the guys that he was naming, oh my goodness, they are going off today. And so he should be doing really well, and or at least at the top of the board in his respective league. And so, you know, and of course, you know, he's talking about tournaments with PGA Golf as well. The guys get together and have these tournaments and, he's definitely in the know with sports and, of course, hockey with the Vancouver Canucks up there in the Pacific Northwest. And, yeah, Sean, it would be a great idea to have an NHL team in Seattle to create that rival. There hasn't been a rival like that between Vancouver and Seattle since, what, the NBA when the Grizzlies were up there and the Sonics were in Seattle. Boy, that's a while ago, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know if you can call that a rivalry. It never really took hold, especially up in Vancouver.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, you know, the Sonics and the Trailblazers had a little bit more of a rival, but yeah, I think that would be something great if that were to happen.
Man, Sean, it's been another exciting sports week and a great weekend. We have the first week of the NFL kickoff, and everything is just bananas on that front. The college game is off and running. We had the huge high 111 points scored at the University of Washington as they upended Eastern by a touchdown, 59-52. The Seahawks got it started off on Thursday in front of the entire nation with the concert before the game. It was just popping. You've got the Mariners and A's duking it out tonight right now at Safeco Field. They're playing for their wild card lives. It's a good time of year.
Yeah, definitely a great time of year. And, of course, as you were mentioning, week one under our belts as far as the NFL is concerned. And so for those teams that have lost, it's not the end of the world, but those teams that have won, it means everything to get off to a great start. And so, you know, that's where we're at, man, going up against Monday Night Football. We are some tough hombres, I can tell you that right now, Sean Wally.
We survived it last year for year one. We'll survive it again. And it's been a fabulous show. Thanks to Michael Gray of 710 ESPN Seattle, Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, the Seahawks beat writer, and, of course, bassist for Theory of a Dead Man, Dean Back. Show 69. It's been a good one, Sean.
It sure has, man. And, of course, make sure that you're tuning in to On the Double with the Double S Express. You can go to www.double-s-express.com, or you can also check us out on BBS Radio at bbsradio.com, and also on iTunes, and, you know, catch our syndications as well. So show number 69 in the books, Mr. Wally. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd, along with Don Newsman, our engineer. You guys have a great week. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double, the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can...